The Guardian.
This country has to go forward with energy, drive, compassion, determination, and above all, understanding. Closed minds close off the future.
He's back. Tony Blair jets in to salvage the party he led to three election victories. But will even his old magic help Labour make up ground on the Tories? And what of the man who once claimed he was the heir to Blair? As David Cameron talks up a Conservative big society, is he having second thoughts about the message of austerity and cuts? This is Politics Weekly and I'm Allegra Stratton. Joining me this week, we have The Guardian's comment supremo, Georgina Henry, columnist Julian Glover, and on the line in our Westminster office, Michael White. Hello, everyone.
Morning.
Good morning.
So who spotted the April Fools in The Guardian? The two of them, actually. Mike?
Oh, no. I know Nick Watt, who's obviously younger and quicker than me, spotted the Tory spoof advert, and I forgot to look for ours.
Julian, which is The Guardian's own one?
Well, The Guardian may perhaps have just gone a little far in suggesting Gordon Brown's going to fight the next election literally by hitting his opponents and has got a whole load of posters to do
it. George, I think you liked it. I quite liked it.
Liked it? You mean thought it was a good idea? Probably not, but I thought the spoof was very funny and brilliantly written, but as an idea for politics, probably not, no.
I on the contrary, fell for it completely, and I've just been on television in Australia saying, you know, Brown's poll ratings went up and the ad boys are considering doing a Reservoir Dogs.
You haven't.
Michael White. Well, from jokes and innocence to the deadly serious matters of the election campaign, the last time we saw Tony Blair in public, his hands trembled as he solemnly gave evidence to the Iraq inquiry. This week he was back on home territory in his former constituency of Sedgefield. Over in Geneva, they were turning on the Large Hadron Collider to search for extra dimensions and the God particle. In Trimden, Tony Blair took to the stage. His mission was to show unity with Gordon Brown and pour scorn on David Cameron.
The tough thing about being in government, especially as time marches on, is that the disappointments accumulate, the public becomes less inclined to give the benefit of the doubt, the call for a time to change becomes easier to make, the prospect of change becomes more attractive. But as I always used to say when some in our ranks urged upon me a mantra of time for a change in 1997, it's actually the most vacuous political slogan in politics. Because time for a change begs the question, change to what exactly?
Mike, you were up in Trimden on Tuesday, net positive or net negative?
Well, it depends how you feel about Tony Blair, and as we all know, and everybody listening knows, for some people, it's wall-to-wall Iraq. It's only Iraq, and they can't bear the sound of his voice, and they wish he was on a flight to The Hague even as we speak. For those of us who don't take that view, you listen to Blair on good form. It was a well-crafted speech. You had a good clip of it there. You could have had half a dozen other really good clips. These people want change. These people want change, but they keep changing what the change is. That was the essence of his message about Cameron. And you know, he's pretty good at it. I've yet to encounter anybody better working in British politics today.
Georgina?
I mean, leaving aside, as Mike says, what people think about Tony Blair, I actually thought it was a good speech because it sort of it did sort of present the Tories' central problem, which is what is the coherent message they're trying to give at this election? And we've seen it a bit. I know we'll talk in a bit about the decision to roll back the NI, the national insurance taxation rise, and so on. And I think that is, and I thought it was a very skillful speech in that way because it pointed out these contradictions that Cameron is having to go through to try and square a difficult circle. And I think the Tories are looking a bit flighty. By this stage, as he reminded everybody in 97, it was all pinned down. You know, there wasn't any room for misunderstanding.
Julia. It was a great, skillful speech. He's a great retail politician. But the speech I'd really like to hear from Tony Blair, it'll be a bit like Stalin's secrets, or the secret speech about Stalin's crimes that Khrushchev gave, which is Tony Blair taking apart Gordon Brown, not taking apart the Tories, because he could
that would be helpful right now.
Skill fantastically to put exactly the same attacks on the lack of clarity as to what Labour stands for now. He did it well. He turned it on the Tories. He had to turn it on the Tories because there wasn't much positive he could say about his own party.
Mike, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? That you've got this unity message when actually they're anything but. You still have people talking about Blairites and Brownites on a sort of hourly basis in Westminster.
Well, I don't think people out in the country, patronising phrase, think of it that way. We're obsessed in the little village that we all inhabit with those sort of distinctions. Fact is, party politicians are a bit like people who support a football team. They support it through thick and thin. And Blair is a Labour politician, just as Mandelson is. People always got that wrong about Mandelson, but I think they've got it now. And therefore, they would say, all right, I was in a bad marriage with Gordon, but at the end of the day, we're still married, and I'll come out. I want him to win, and I'll do my best. And in fairness to Blair, unlike Ted Heath and Margaret Thatcher, to name but two, you know, he's kept his mouth shut, whatever he thinks of Gordon making a mess of it, and he must have thought it an awful lot since June 2007. He's kept his mouth shut and quietly made money.
But, Mike, that's true of the man who gives his surname to the sort of tribe. But actually, in terms of the lower-level former ministers and the MPs, there is a big fight going on, isn't there?
Well, you're closer to these things than me. I'd say there's a little fight going on, and that where the big picture is that the Labour government goes into this election fairly united, and with a modest, Blair called it, so what did he say, competent, solid and consistent.
But Mike,
not exactly a flashy or flattering description, but he said better than the other side.
Mike, we can't allow you to get away with saying Tony Blair is quietly making money and supporting Labour values. This is a man who's enriching himself on a scale that Stephen Byers and Co. can only dream of. The posters of his speeches turn up in Malaysia. The latest, it's pretty shocking. It's not reported as much as it can be because it's a pretty hard thing to report. It's hard to know what his tax status is. We assume he's paying taxes in Britain. Tony Blair is enriching himself. He's not exhibiting Labour values at all. There's a total hypocrisy in this speech.
Which is why the speech may not matter at all, even though if you take it aside from the man, it was quite a good one.
If you, I can see that point of view. Indeed, I was the first in the programme to make that point. But not everybody feels that way about Tony Blair. They didn't in.
But it isn't just Iraq. That's the
village of Trimdon. Well,
perhaps it's the suntan when the weather is plunging.
Perhaps it is, but he's always got that now. You see, Blair's not a hypocrite about money because he's always been in favour of money. People knew him before he'd ever got elected to anything, said Tony and Sherry, very keen on money. And Blair famously said, I'm not here to stop David Beckham making money. So you may find it unattractive. I do myself. But he's not actually a hypocrite.
Georgina, if you were a Labour candidate, which you'd be a very excellent example, would you want Tony Blair campaigning on your behalf or not this election?
I think that they have to move beyond him, really. I do think it was a skillful speech, and perhaps what it does is, as Mike says, demonstrates quite how good he is at that. But I don't think you can divorce it. I actually agree with Julian. I don't think you can divorce it from everything else we know about Tony Blair in the last year or two. I accept Mike's point that there are some people who'll never get over Iraq and so on, but I'm not really talking about those. I, like Julian, think it's not just about Iraq. It's about what he's seen to have done, and there's been an awful lot in the papers about money. And, you know, it's not a time where people feel very kindly towards extremely rich people who are a bit...
Tony Blair uses his money to run foundations, a sports foundation in the northeast, a faith foundation, not my cup of tea or yours. He does all sorts of things. He makes a pile of money and
buys a few stately homes along the way.
He's keen on that sort of thing, and she's keen on it.
But it's not hypocrisy.
Well, from the politics of one period to another, this week we got a glimpse of the era of pre-election televised debates. It was, as it turned out, a very polite affair between the would-be chancellors, but then it was the tax cut offered by George Osborne that claimed all the headlines.
Under the Conservatives, 7 out of 10 working people in Britain will be better off than under Labour, and nobody will be worse off. People on lower incomes will receive a tax cut. Indeed, they will benefit the most as a proportion of their income. People on middle incomes will avoid Labour's tax rise. Taxes on jobs will be lower. The tax system will be fairer. Jobs will be saved. That is the way to secure a recovery.
Georgina, they've spent the last 4 years saying we won't offer panicking tax cuts. It's just not credible just before an election. It's probably quite a loaded question, but what was your feeling?
Well, I think it's going to play well. And I absolutely accept that it's not just the last 4 years. I mean, they've spent the last 3 months campaigning that the deficit is the absolute crucial thing in British politics, and it's all about deficit reduction. And in a sense, that's just suddenly a message that's jettisoned, thus playing to the critique of Cameron that actually he is inconsistent, contradictory, doesn't stick to a single message. And that is the Tory problem. I mean, there's that whole sort of analysis made by Philip Gould today in our paper. But I think it actually will play well to the electorate. I think it's quite tough, this national insurance rise on incomes around 20,000. I think it's extremely significant, this letter in the Telegraph today. I think it gives the Tory really respectable cover. It's the beginning. I mean, it's interesting how many names are now coming out in quite a politically partisan way, saying this is a good thing to do. And although, you know, you can go through the list and look at the names and that sort of thing, but I mean, there are some serious figures in there, including two people who are not traditionally seen as just sort of, you know, real Tories. And I think that's very interesting. And business wants to back a winner, and they obviously think that this is going to play very well. And I think it probably will, even though, as I say, it doesn't make sense in terms of their, particularly in terms of their strategy for the last 3 months.
Mike, what do you make in terms of the sort of credibility argument?
Well, I think Georgina's making valuable points there, and I still stick to the view that you know, the Tories, despite their attempts to lose this election, are probably narrowly going to win it. On the other hand, the Osborne figures don't stack up, nor do Vince Cable's either, but who's counting, nor do Alistair Darling's, in fairness. But the idea that you can switch from deficit priority to an unfunded tax cut ought to be scary.
Julian, they had to find something. Do you think they pulled for the right lever?
I think it's economically a more logical thing to act on than inheritance tax or
putting up VAT
or giving stamp duty cuts, which seems to be the government's policy as well as the Conservative Party policy, and will only fuel the housing bubble we didn't want. There is a good case for saying we shouldn't tax people for employing people in a recession when we want jobs to stay high and unemployment's expensive for the government.
But they got criticised for doing the VAT as well a few months ago. To govern is to choose, and we don't want the housing bubble to collapse, because that's one problem we don't have that the Americans have. If you want a housing bubble to collapse, go to Detroit.
Right now, if I had to choose a tax cut, it wouldn't be on housing. And I think tax on employment, and it's not, of course, a tax cut, it's a deferred or restricted tax rise, then that may be the political hard part of it. I don't know that people really understand national insurance. I don't know that they feel in their pockets this is just a penny off income tax, the easy sell, or a penny on income tax, as the Lib Dems used to sell. It's
so
a complex thing to understand.
With Georgina, then
so I think economically there's some logic to it. I think politically it'll be harder to promote.
I only mean economically that given that all three parties agree the deficit needs to be cut. I mean, they're all, as Mike's just said it too, I mean, in denial about it to a certain extent. And we can all disagree probably about the how they should go about it, but people know at some point the pain is going to start. And I don't think you'll get any honesty in the next 4 weeks about it. All I meant was, I think it's politically astute, because I think people don't want to vote for a party. And in a way, if you think about the Tories' problems, the speech that Osborne made at last autumn's party conference was a very difficult message. People didn't like that. It was all pain, pain, pain. And yes, the Chancellor's on Monday night, or the would-be Chancellor's debate, said, we all know that Thatcher's cuts will look small in comparison with what has to come. But nobody wants to give that clarity. And the Tories know that. The more they talk about swinging cuts, deficit reduction, all the rest of it, the more people don't want to vote.
Mike, this morning the Labour Party had a press conference where they were
even
talking
if it's
about
honest.
What they call the credibility gap that's running to billions. They did this first in January and they've now repeated it. Will that cut through the idea that some of these pledges from the Tories are not at all funded?
Well, it might do. It depends on what happens in the leaders' debates. I mean, the Chancellor's debate, I thought, was quite respectable, but a sort of scoreless draw, really, which Vince won narrowly, which is easy because he's funny as well as clever, but nobody lost. But there's a serious academic or economic intellectual point underpinning the idea that you don't cut this year, and it's got respectable backing, very respectable backing, which says simply when the private sector is recapitalising, cutting down its debt, saving again, we're doing it as individuals and as firms, then the state, which has deep pockets, keeps the juices of the economy flowing, and we don't go into a 1930s style depression. Everybody who knows anything really accepts that, and you have to be sure that the recovery is solid before you start cutting back
the deficit. That was a stronger argument a year ago. We're going to have an election in May. The budget won't come until June. It won't be cutting this year. It'll be cuts heading towards the end of the year, starting next year, and Labour will do exactly the same.
No. Let's just, important point. I think George Osborne is smart enough not to believe what he says. Let's put it that way. And he won't do what he says he'll do. And in any case, he can't.
Well, if the Chancellor's debate didn't set pulses racing throughout the country, can we expect any better from the leaders themselves? Here's the Spectator's editor, Fraser Nelson.
I imagine that the amount of cups of teas being made 20 minutes into that debate will surge throughout the nation if it is as boring as that, which is a shame because in our Prime Minister's Question Time, we have, as a country, a great method to see two guys going at it against each other. If the political debates are pale imitations of that, I really do think voters are going to feel shortchanged. But those who want to be informed rather than just see it as a piece of political panto might be grateful for it. I mean, a lot of people, I've heard anyway, said that they were quietly impressed by George Osborne because he wasn't the complete fool he'd been described as being in the media. But you could say that he killed the calumnies, he managed to combat his negatives. It's not a bad result. I can't say he walked away there from a triumph, but I do think it was a net positive for him. It would have won more voters around for him, and that is the objective of the whole thing.
George, are you looking forward to them on the basis of Monday night?
I am quite looking forward to them, actually. I mean, partly because it's something new, and I think that in itself is interesting. I mean, it was interesting, actually, watching the Chancellor's debate, because if you're watching it simultaneously on TV and on the internet, that's a kind of pretty interesting thing to do, and watching Twitter and all the other social media. I mean, it's a sort of extraordinary thing, because 5 years ago, all of this stuff wasn't going on. And so absolutely every gesture, every word, every sentence is scrutinised and commented on as it's happening live, and it's fascinating to watch that. And you sense they were all quite nervous because they know that too. It wasn't the most interesting of debates, was it? But I don't know whether the leaders will be either, because it's a question of how they play it. Is it something where you are quite aggressive, trying to separate the parties, or actually on Tuesday night, there's an awful lot of sort of common ground? I mean, Vince, as Mike says, did score a few great sound bites, and he was in a really good position in the middle, looking left, looking right. And it's a problem for the main parties, isn't it? Well, because you've always got the Lib Dems with your other opponent against you. So there's always this sort of two against one thing going on. I don't know how they'll do. I mean, I think it's going to be an interesting test, but probably it, I don't know if it reveals anything in the end, because I think they'll be quite careful just to make sure they don't make mistakes rather than really score points.
And it's longer, Mike. This was an hour. It's going to be 90 minutes. Don't you think there's the possibility to be really quite a turn-off rather than a turn-on to politics?
Oh, yeah. There weren't many adverts on Channel 4, were there, on Monday
zero.
Night? That's right. On the other hand, it's their civic duty to do it. Same as the American networks do it. I thought it was okay. I mean, it was not brilliant.
It's going to be great. Come on, we're all talking these down.
Julian, we're talking them up. They're going to be awful. They're going to be terminatingly dull. I've watched many of these things in America.
They won't be like American ones. They're going to be much better. Our politicians are much more outspoken.
They are much better. They're in much better training because of Question Time. And Question Time is better. We all despise Question Time. But when the press gets a chance to have Question Time, it makes a pretty poor job of it once a month. We don't coordinate our attacks.
I think we're just jealous.
Will they make it or break it? Saying they're going to be great. Are they going to be...
I think the media is anxious about these things because it's politicians going to be able to speak directly to the people, and we want to mediate in between. And we're talking them down and saying they're boring. You need to listen to us to interpret it. Actually, I think voters might watch it in bigger quantities than we expect. And then they might not always want to hear what we think.
Mike, on the basis of Monday night, what lessons would you say that the leaders have learnt from their Chancellor's sort of dress rehearsees?
Well, I was told that there were no rules on the Channel 4 show, but apparently this wasn't so. In fact, a friend of mine told me that they were ringing, the Tories in particular, were ringing up even during the programme demanding changes and better balances and you're being unfair on our man. I agree with whoever said that George Osborne came out of it quite well. He could have lost the war in an afternoon, and he didn't. And of course, even by being treated on equal terms, the Lib Dems get a break, which they haven't had in elections since the 1920s.
And the party leaders' debates will be good for Clegg, won't they?
Yeah, they will, unless he comes over as a horrid little prig, which he sometimes does.
Well, that is it for the last podcast of what's probably the pre-election period. We're expecting Gordon Brown to call the election on Tuesday of next week. Thanks to Julian Glover, Georgina Henry and Michael White. Tom Clark will be back with us next week. I'm Allegra Stratton, and the producer was Phil Maynard. Thanks for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.